This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, hour number two rolling along this morning. And if you just joined us, it is the Cincinnati Bengals today as we continue along with our NFL previews. All right, so before we get to that, there's some other news in the NFL. This story is... I don't want to say it's kind of a tale as old as time, but it's a little bit prominent. And Jonathan Taylor, Indianapolis Colts running back, is out to rehab his ankle. But the Colts have said that he's also reported that he's got had a back problem and some hamstring issues, which then Jonathan Taylor said, no, I don't. I have an ankle injury. I'm going to be away from the team and I'm going to rehab on my own. So Jim Irsay, if you remember when we were going through the entire running back ordeal with the franchise tag coming and going, three running backs got franchise tagged. Saquon Barkley got a deal around the franchise tag number. Tony Pollard signed his deal and Josh Jacobs is holding out in Las Vegas. But Jonathan Taylor, who is up for a new contract, knows that it's kind of dark for his position in terms of being able to cash in on some big money. And his owner, Jim Irsay, has pointed out that, oh, this is a CBA. This is what happens. This is what we do. And all of a sudden now, you're seeing running backs being like, yeah, you know what? We're going to figure out a way to get around this. And we're going to try to figure out a way to up our value of our position. It's difficult to do because teams are not they're not getting away from the running game. But what they're doing is they're trying to find other younger, cheaper running backs to replace guys they don't really want to pay $16 million a year for. So Taylor was in a spot where he thought, you know what? He gets into the league. If he does well, he'll be able to cash in when his rookie contract's up. Now it looks like when his rookie contract's up, he's not going to be able to make the kind of money that he wants. And oh, by the way, Colts owner Jim Irsay is commenting on Twitter that that's too bad. That's the CBA you negotiated. What do you want? Right? So now this has led to friction between him and Irsay and him and the team. Jonathan Taylor wants to be traded. Irsay doesn't have to trade him, and Irsay doesn't have to do a thing because he can franchise tag him and then franchise tag him again if he wants and then figure out a way to replace him as running back. And that's the unbelievable situation that running backs are in the National Football League. It's messy. It's really, really messy. And Taylor's in a really bad situation too because, as we talked about with Barkley, and we're gonna and again with Josh Jacobs, if you want to make good money, forget big, huge money. Forget big, huge contracts. Forget guaranteed money. If you just want the check that you get to be large, you got to do it running the football in the National Football League. You're not going to go on to be an analyst right away. You're not going to go find another gig that's going to pay you $10 million a year if you're Josh Jacobs. But you've got to play. Right? You've got to keep your lifestyle that you've been accustomed to because you don't have any other leverage, right? Like the Raiders are not going to be able to work out a deal until the offseason. The only thing they can do is promise him a deal. And so what are you holding out for? You can't get more money on the franchise tag deal. That day came and went. And Taylor is in sort of the same boat because Taylor is like, I want to be traded. All right, but we're not going to trade you. I want a new deal. We don't even have to negotiate yet. And he's just seeing what's ahead of him and he can't see ahead. He's not seeing a bright future ahead of himself. That's the problem with this position. I don't know. I think in the end, if you're Jonathan Taylor, I think you rehab, you come back, you show value and you try to negotiate in good faith with what you have as value. That's the only thing I can think of. Holding out is just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work on a team that really their number one concern is to have Anthony Richardson develop. Let's be honest. I know we're talking about 53 guys and 53 guys want to win. And some of these veterans that are on that team are not interested in the development of Anthony Richardson, and they don't want the season to be about the development of a rookie quarterback. But in the end, that's kind of what the Colts are looking at as a franchise. They've got a rookie head coach in Shane Steichen, and they got a rookie quarterback in Anthony Richardson. Now, Gardner Minshew is expected to start the first couple of games, but it'll be Anthony Richardson's job down the road pretty quickly. Now, if you get Jonathan Taylor in the backfield, it helps. When we did our Colts preview, that was the one thing we were talking about. You want a running game to help a quarterback because you don't want the quarterback throwing two of the four of the three downs to get a first down. You want to be able to run, maybe run again, and maybe throw on third down, or you want to be able to throw on second down, maybe setting up a short run on third down to move the chains. You want to have that threat so that the teams are not sending everybody in coverage and they don't have to stack eight in the box. You know, there's so many different things that a running game can do for you. But is that what Jonathan Taylor's value is to the Colts? Because if that's the way the Colts see Jonathan Taylor's value, forget it. That's an uphill battle he can't climb. He can have 1,800 yards rushing, and the mindset in the NFL is it still doesn't matter. It still doesn't matter. We still can find younger guys in the draft to replace you. And we don't even have to pick them in the first round. That's the great thing about the position. And I think in the end, that is where these guys stand. I think of all the three that got franchise tagged, I think the biggest one that was eye-opening was Saquon Barkley. If you are counting for 40% of the offense and you can't get a long-term deal, Who's going to get a long-term deal? Right? I mean, that's the problem. I mean, if he couldn't get a deal by the deadline, who is going to?
Now, what's a long-term deal? 5 years?
Yeah, 3-4 years.
Yeah.
$25 million guaranteed.
And that's the thing. I mean, he couldn't even get a 3-year deal.
$15 million a year. Yeah.
And I have no idea if his injury played into it. It's like, well, you know, he missed that one season.
I mean, you know what? If you have a league like baseball, you don't have a salary cap, but you maybe have a luxury tax issue, you can just give money and go, all right, we'll give it to you and hope for the best. But in the end, but in this league, it's like, we want to make sure that we'll give you this money, but we need to make sure that it doesn't hurt us on the back end and set our franchise back when you suffer a career-ending injury in year two.
And that's why quarterbacks are getting all the money, because, I mean, that's also the reason why, like, for the owners who are sitting there going to the table saying, hey, we need to make up all these rules.
Right. Oh, it was the hardest thing to get through people's heads when those rules came out to protect the quarterback.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would hear it over and over again from people. I can't watch this sport anymore. It's wussified. And I'm like, if you paid a guy $40 million a year, what would you do? Like, you think you want the league to be driving these guys into the turf, giving them concussions constantly?
They miss the big hits, but right? I mean, they're also, you know, wanting all the lawsuits.
I mean, the Steelers weren't paying Terry Bradshaw $40 million. If they were paying him $40 million in the 70s, they would be creating rules then. It's just that's the nature of this business.
Yeah, how many old-timers do you sit there, you listen to going, man, I couldn't imagine what these guys were making today.
Yeah.
You know, some of the all-time greats, like especially in baseball, where they're sitting back in, you know they're George Brett, like in the 80s, sitting there probably today looking and going, man, God, I can't believe, you know, Mike Trout signed that.
Yeah. Exactly. $400-something million.
Yeah.
$370 for a guy who's betting fourth, fifth in the lineup, sixth in the lineup. And yeah. It's just, and so you're right. I mean, the rules, they protect it, but they don't have rules to protect running backs.
Yeah, but then, that's running backs like, yeah. You know, we got three more on our roster. It's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, sure. And the problem is now we're in I don't think it's watered down, but we only get like really two or three exceptional running backs each year.
That's the thing, right? Yeah, there really
is game changing running backs that we're going to be talking about. Like Jonathan Taylor, we're talking about him now, but are we really going to be talking about him 2 years from now?
And
he's not Adrian Peterson.
It's definitely right. It's definitely switched. Yeah, that's the one thing that this summer has sort of reminded us, is that there was a time. You don't have to go back that far. It's not like decades and decades, but you don't have to go back that far where the running back was one of the most important person on the team. Now, again, when I grew up, you could make the argument he was the most important player on the team. That was the 80s.
Yes. Right?
That was the 80s. You could make the argument that we didn't have this sort of aerial attack like we do now. Quarterbacks aren't throwing.
I don't remember all the quarterbacks for the Raiders, but I know that Marcus Allen and Bo Jackson shared a backfield together.
Right, exactly. You know, when I was collecting my football cards in the early 80s, it was, you know, Walter Payton and Franco Harris and Tony Dorsett. And, oh, you had this bevy of running backs. And quarterbacks were great, don't get me wrong, but it really was, do you run the football? Do you run the football well? Because that helps you set up the passing game. And like Fran Tarkington was a great thrower of the football, but he was a scrambler. And that's kind of what else, you know, that was the other element of it. But it is, we've gone in a different direction now. And we've not only gone in a different direction, you're right. Even when you are established where you're rushing for 1,600, 1,700 yards a season, accounting for X amount of touchdowns, you're replaceable. People here in Tennessee asked me about Derrick Henry, and I'm like, we'll see. Derrick Henry's final year is coming up. This is it.
He could be Chris Johnson.
Yeah.
Remember, Chris Johnson lit the world. 2,000-plus yards.
That's exactly right.
And then out of the league, what, 2-3 years later?
Yep.
It's done. Like, thanks for that one season.
Why would the Titans give Derrick Henry another contract? He's approaching 30. They don't necessarily... They don't want to devise an entire offense around him. They want to be more aerial like everybody else in the league. It's very difficult for that position. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up next. And again, more on the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that should be winning a Super Bowl any minute now. Tick, tick, tick. And we'll also talk to Mike Petralia in hour number 3 on the Bengals. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, the good, the bad, and the dumb. Good Wednesday to you as we continue on Wake Up Call. All right, it is midweek. It is the Cincinnati Bengals today. What else is good?
Hey, you know what? This good is 10 years in making.
10 years in the making.
Yeah, okay. It's taken 10 years, Tony, for this good to be good. And this is a really good good, by the way.
All right.
Because I know you'll be excited. Because the tradition of rolling the corner, it will be back this season.
Oh, really?
So if you don't know what that is the throwing toilet paper rolls at Toomer's Corner.
Yes.
On all the old oak trees after an Auburn victory. Will be officially back this year.
Are they replanting trees?
They replanted a while ago.
Good.
And there's like a timeline. So we had to go all the way back to, what was it, 2011?
Yeah, it was around that time, right.
It was when Cam Newton led a charge, took the team, against Alabama.
Against Alabama, yep.
And then an Alabama fan, whose name has escaped me right
Harvey
now.
Harvey Updike there was the name of the individual.
Poisoned the old oak trees that are there.
He poisoned the trees and then called Paul Feinbaum and told him about it on the radio show.
Yep.
Said he poisoned the trees at Toomer's Corner.
And the guy was sent to jail.
He was arrested, yeah.
Sorry to say that he died a couple years ago.
Yes, he did. And they frantically, I mean, they got people from around the world to try to save those trees.
Yeah.
They brought in tree experts anywhere. Any university that had tree experts to try to get rid of this poison, to get it out of the tree, they tried everything and they couldn't. And eventually it was effective.
Rest of the timeline went like this. They transplanted new trees in 2015, right? And so the toilet paper tradition was again suspended in 2016 because one of the trees was damaged by a fire midseason.
Wow.
And another one wasn't surviving the move. Then they had two more trees replacing those trees in 2017, and now they have deemed those trees suitable for rolling.
Oh, that's great. Great. That's these traditions are awesome.
Yeah. And that'll be kind of fun to see. I hope we do get video of the first one. I mean, it'll probably be an emotional thing because there's about two two full generation of students who didn't get a chance to do it
That's
at all.
Right. That's right.
Just about right.
Hopefully, if I didn't get to roll the corner, I would go down and say, I'm back. I'm going to do that.
I'm coming.
I didn't get to do it when I was a student, but now that I'm working for blah, 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 I will come down and do it.
Probably the only sanctioned toilet papering that's allowed, right?
That's right. That's right. Oh, that's awesome. Good story. Good story.
Yeah. So it'll be officially back.
All right. What is the bad of the day?
I have to do this. I mean, this team has done so much good this season.
Yes.
So many good things. And I am talking about the Orioles.
Yes. I was going to wonder if you had this in the good, the bad, and the dumb.
I had it for yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we didn't have a show yesterday. So I saved it for today because this is a terrible look for the Orioles organization, the upper management who control the Orioles media. If you didn't see the story, which you must have been living on a rock, because if you're a sports radio person, you know that you've heard the story countless times. Orioles broadcaster Kevin Brown was suspended for I don't know what, Tony.
Well, here's the thing. So I saw the article and they said Kevin Brown has been this is what got Kevin Brown suspended. And I was expecting a bunch of F-bombs.
Yep.
I was expecting maybe a racist joke that has gotten other broadcasters in trouble.
Maybe something off right? mic.
Off
that
mic.
We've heard that happen before.
Where he went a little off the deep end.
Yep.
And I thought, okay, all right, here's another one where a guy is
just happens sometimes.
Spewing out some stuff that he's not supposed to, and the team feels like they got to suspend him until they figure out a way to fire him. Think about the Oakland A's announcer.
Yep.
Think about Tom Brenneman, right?
Of course.
So these guys, one off mic, one on mic, just a slip up. So that's what I was expecting. So I turn on the video, and I'm watching it, and I'm watching it, and I'm listening to it, and I don't
waiting
hear anything.
For it.
And then I see the little bar. It's getting to the end of the video, and I'm like, well, what did he say? So I go back. I listen to it again. I don't hear anything. Then I go into the comments, and that's when people said, oh, he was critical of the Orioles and their performance against the Rays. But he was stating facts.
Facts. Facts.
He wasn't saying, not only is this team 0-15 against the Rays at Tropicana Field prior to this season, they're a lousy baseball team that I'm embarrassed to be a part of.
Yeah.
He didn't go down that road.
If he went that, he was like, you know, it was like, if he even said, like, you know, for years I've struggled doing this job because the team was so bad, I've often thought about leaving and quitting and, you know, saying things like that. Then I can sit there like, all right, you know, there's reason for that, but... He literally, I mean, and the thing that bothers me too is that the graphics team made a graphic basically saying what he was, showing, giving us a visual aid to what he was saying.
That's a producer. That's a producer saying,
yeah.
Hey, we're going to put the graphic up, so please talk about this graphic. Like, this is what we're going to do in the pregame. And also, he's setting it up like, hey, Oriole fans, we haven't had good luck here. We have not had good games here, but we're in first place. We're battling for first place with this team now.
You know, and I thought, second, too, it was like, okay, was it the mention of the Rays not being a slouch team? Was that taken the wrong way out of context?
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out, and it's a horrible, horrible look for the Orioles upper management to say, oh, you're suspended. He is due back to be on the broadcast Friday. I don't know if I would.
Oh.
I mean, I'm going to because it would be my job, but at the same time, Kevin Brown's going to be like, okay, what can I say and not say?
Yeah, if I was Kevin Brown, I hope that in conversations with the team, he stood up for himself and he said, look, I've been with this. He's been with the organization for 5 years. I think he would have said, look, I don't want to be on the mic nervous about what I'm saying. Like, I don't want to evaluate everything in this context. I'm not going to go on a Tom Brenneman. I'm not going to tell the Tom Brenneman off mic joke. I'm not going to mention. I'm not going to throw my political opinions out there. But when I talk about this team, let's make it clear what I can and can't talk about. If I'm talking about how awesome this season is in context to other seasons, we're not making it up. This team was in the bottom of the division.
Yeah.
This team was
terrible.
And now they're great. And I want people to be excited about it because of the struggles that they've had leading up to this.
And just, and letting people know, it's like, look how much we've turned around, guys.
Right, right.
I mean, are they not allowed to speak about, were they 0-21?
I guess they were like 0-15 at Tropicana.
I don't know the other ones. I'm saying in the past.
Remember okay, I don't know.
When they started the season, weren't they like it's a major league record. They started the season.
Yeah.
Was 0-21 or was it 0-18?
I don't know if that was put into this context.
No, it wasn't put in that context. Right. What I'm saying is that is he not allowed to talk about that?
Right. My thing is like the Broncos. The Broncos haven't beaten the Kansas City Chiefs since Peyton Manning was a quarterback. I think it's 15 straight losses that they've had against the Chiefs. Or something along those lines, like 13 or 14. Something along those
lines. Don't talk about it.
But you're not allowed to bring that up?
Yeah.
Like, you're not allowed to. The team doesn't want you to bring that up?
Colts. Colts can't win in Jacksonville. Right? Never have.
Right?
In their entire existence.
Like, you should be able to say, hey, we struggle here. This is what we're doing. And listen, I don't know how old he is. I think he's in his mid-30s.
Yeah, but he looks young.
He looks like he's out of high school. But he's got a very bright future in this business because every single broadcaster has come to his defense. God. Every single one of them. And you know what the thing was? The A's guy that slipped up and said the N-word when he was giving praise to the Negro League Museum, no one came to his defense.
No.
No one was chanting his name at the stadium.
Every sports pundit broadcaster in the United States came to his.
Yeah, he is getting inundated with love.
Yeah, he has a job, no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the season, I mean, his agent might be saying, hey, man, I'm getting offers all over the place.
He got a $750,000 offer from, like, some porn company to call videos. Like, that's, like when you've reached the point where, again, like, these guys, I'll be honest with you, man, most of these guys are anonymous guys, right?
Right.
They're just broadcasters. They all sound alike. They're all the same.
Couldn't tell you who the broadcaster was for the, you know...
Sometimes I see a name and I go, oh, dude, I remember that guy. He was a minor league guy 10 years ago. Like, I'll just know it because I'm in the business. But most people don't know who these people are. This guy is getting, like, love from everywhere. Like, everybody is like, wait.
Because it was
what?
So ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
I did the same thing as you. It's like, oh, here's another one. Let's see what he has to say. And you just wait and you're waiting and you're waiting. And I was like, all right, I must have missed it. Let me go back.
And then
listen to it again and still didn't hear anything. I was like, I don't know what. And I had to do the same thing you did. I had to go through the comments and look and just see what they said. And I was like, that's it? Really?
That's
he was
awesome.
Talking. He said some facts about the team.
And he's probably thrilled. He's in a pennant race. Like,
my God.
It's every night's a must-see.
That's why I said, I mean, and you know, like I saw a video yesterday of their closer. The closer's his
Felix
entrance.
Felix Bautista, yeah.
His entrance is so much fun.
It's awesome.
That's what I said. This team has done so much good, and you have this one glaring thing that's just, it's just ugly.
Fans are chanting free Kevin Brown at ball games. Bad look for the O's.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we are continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb. That Kevin Brown story, I'm man, it just blew up in the Orioles' face, man.
It really totally did.
And they don't need it. They're playing great, and they don't need it.
You said it.
So many good things are happening, and they've got this now. They suspend a guy for being, not critical, but reminding people they were once bad.
Yeah, just reminding them where they came from.
It's awful. So what is the dumb of the day? You say you got two?
I got two dumbs.
Yeah, okay.
The first one, John Rahm.
Yep.
Recently was asked a question about what he would like to see with PGA Tour. Would it be, you know, larger pieces of the pie type of thing and blah, blah, blah. And John Rahm just had a very, very simple request. Which was, he wishes that they would be porta potties at each of the holes during a PGA Tour event.
Well, yeah, why aren't there?
You know, he says he can't control where he has to go. He was caught on camera or caught in person or something like that, peeing on a tree.
Well,
these guys have no choice. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, there's rumors that Ricky Fowler, the reason why he lost the U.S. Open was because. You know, the body said, hey, man, we need to get to a restroom ASAP, and that's why he bogeyed the final.
Yeah, well, let's just have a frank conversation about this. When you really have to go to the bathroom and there's no bathroom and the body goes, we're going without you. You can't think of anything else.
Yeah.
Like, you can't think of anything else.
And if you're a guy, it's doubly worse when you, you know, you look and you see all the trees. Let's face it. You know, when you're a guy, it's a thing we do.
Yeah.
We look at those trees and go, restroom, restroom, restroom.
Exactly.
Restroom.
Like a dog to a fire hydrant. We do. And so, again, if you're walking up the 15th hole and you realize there's no bathroom and you've got to go, how are you concentrating on golf shots? Like the precision accurate golf shots you have to hit when your body's like, I'm going to release this any minute.
Yeah.
Like, so whatever you're doing, it doesn't matter, but we're getting rid of this.
Cause if you're, if it's a practice round and no cameras are on you, no patrons are out there, maybe it's just you and somebody else out on the course and no one else is around. You always go to your buddy, like, excuse me, one second.
Right.
Let me just excuse myself. Little grove of trees over there. I can kind of hide myself, do my thing, and then come back out and, you know, and shank this shot.
And if you're a golfer, if you're a pro golfer that's you know, you're trying to stay hydrated out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're,
no,
just
you're walking. Come on.
Walking, I mean, and exercising.
Have, like, if you and I go, we have carts.
Right.
Be exactly. Like, I was like, oh, I can zip over to the clubhouse real quick.
Man, I tell you right now, I miss walking because I do like the rhythm of it. I just can't do it anymore, man. I can't carry a bag. I can pull a cart, but courses now that I see are just built for golf carts. They're like, hole one is here, and then you got to drive down this road, and hole two is here. Whereas the old courses were like
17 miles away.
The old courses were like, as soon as you get off the green, the tee is right over here. Like, right over here. And so it's easier to do that.
So, so really, it's on the PGA Tour. I mean, figure it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a porta potty, the aesthetics might not be camera worthy, but then adjust the cameras.
Right.
So you don't show them. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Does he have another one that he wants? Did he get anything else?
No, that was his main thing.
That was good for him.
That was his main thing.
So he didn't say, oh, all right, I'll give you the monetary answer and golf tour thing. No, he's like, bathrooms.
Bathrooms, man. He's like, I need them.
Good for him. All right, what is the second dumb of the day?
The second dumb, I didn't know if I wanted to bring this up because, you know, people flub all the time. You know?
Yeah.
And in the same, well, it's not really the same, but Colin Cowherd yesterday. And I said, I don't want to make fun of sports broadcasters because Lord knows I've made mistakes.
Sure. We all do.
But he came out with this list, and it's quarterbacks that were drafted since 2013 that can't win Super Bowls.
Right.
And I'm just going to play a little snippet because everyone's harping on this one, but I'm going to take it a step further, right? So this is Colin Cowherd yesterday about the quarterbacks that can't win Super Bowls.
And then the third category is 20 guys who are not getting to a Super Bowl and certainly not winning it. And that's everybody else. From Baker Mayfield, Teddy Bridgewater, Dwayne Haskins, guys that are just not, that it says can win Super Bowls. It can't. Can't win Super Bowls. Okay? So 6 stars, 4 high-end starters, and 20 guys that can't win a Super Bowl.
So I don't know if you caught that there, Tony.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things about this. One, when he paused, I thought somebody had told him Dwayne Haskins is dead.
Yeah,
he's right. Okay. Two, I don't know how he structures his segments or his shows, but sounds like he told somebody make a list.
Well, there's a list, and then there's a graphic saying quarterbacks that can win Super Bowls, but he was like, that's what he was pausing. He's like, no, it's can't.
Right. Right. So somebody made a mistake on that. So where he was he reading the list on the screen?
I don't think he was reading it on the screen. I think he might, unless it was like in a video screen that he could see where it's himself, or he was reading a piece of paper. I mean, I don't know. He obviously didn't proofread this beforehand.
Okay. So what I'm thinking about is that what had happened was that he has a whole bunch of people prepping the show for him. So he said, come up with 20 guys that can't win Super Bowls. Right.
Yep.
And they did. And then since 2000, so basically give me the list of quarterbacks that have been drafted since 2013. They're not going to win a Super Bowl. And so his staff created the list. Somebody put Dwayne Haskins on there, and that he was quickly looking at the list. He wasn't going to go over each one of them as to why, but he was just going over the list, and he just randomly was selecting a few, and Dwayne Haskins was on there, and he just said it without realizing somebody should have not put it on there. But he was caught up in the moment of just giving a couple of examples here, kids, right? Like, here we're doing, and then his eyes caught Dwayne Haskins, and his brain didn't process that Dwayne Haskins was dead.
I'll give him the benefit. I'll give you that.
But at the same time, you should be going over that, like, just double checking.
Tony, here's where it gets worse, right? Because I have the list of 20 names that he has that can't win Super Bowls.
Right.
And so, Teddy Bridgewater might be. I'm not really on a team yet, but he's.
I think he just re-signed with the Saints or something, or Lions.
Lions
was one of those teams. He's on yet another team as a backup. Yeah.
But here's some of the other names that he has on this list, okay? Blake Bortles.
Where's Blake Bortles?
He's retired.
Right. See, that's where I would go to my people and go, guys, let's talk active players. Pointless when they can't win a Super Bowl because they're not in the league anymore.
Right. How about these names, Tony? Because all these three quarterbacks are out of the league. Paxton Lynch.
Okay.
When was the last time you heard about EJ Manuel?
Okay, so he's got to sit down with his crew then.
And obviously, you know, you were talking about him last hour. Johnny Manziel, probably not in a good running to get a Super Bowl.
Not going to win a Super Bowl.
And then he has three other. I'll give you three more names: Marcus Mariota, Josh Rosen, Carson Wentz. They're all free agents. They're not even with the team right now.
Yeah.
So I mean, I feel like, you know, it's lazy.
No, that is because what he basically got was a list of quarterbacks that were drafted. I'm assuming these were first round picks.
Probably.
What the criteria was for them.
Yeah, I'm looking them over. I mean, most of these guys all these guys are first rounders.
So maybe he was saying, okay, all the first round quarterbacks that were drafted from 2013 up, give me that list. And then the individuals that were putting that together for him should have then just simply looked up at Pro Football Reference to find that they are not active.
What team are they on?
What team are they currently on? And then realize, oh, they've been out of the league 3 years. Cross him off. Oh, I'm sorry. He passed away. Cross. Like, go through that. You'll find that it's not very difficult to do.
He does have Kenny Pickett on this list as well.
Okay, so he thinks Kenny Pickett will never win a Super Bowl.
Right.
All right. You go.
He was a rookie last year. I guess, you know, the writing's on the wall. Kenny, quit.
Yeah.
I don't know why the Steelers are bothering with him now.
All right.
Can't win a Super Bowl.
All right. Can't win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. I think it's more of just, I think it's exactly what you said. Give me all the first round picks of quarterbacks that are out there, and we're gonna go through the list. We're going to go all the way down.
Yeah.
You know, you know, Mahomes, obviously, he can win the Super Bowl.
But it does go to show you sometimes there's a trust that gets built up where you've got, like, hey, Matt on my team and Sarah on my team and Josh on my team. They do a really good job. They do really good research. And so you trust them. But again, when you're talking and sometimes your brain does not process what you're saying. Sometimes you say things off a list that you're like, oh, wait, that doesn't make sense. No one would have blamed him if he had come back and said, oh, I do not know why Dwayne Haskins is on this list. He tragically passed away.
That's the thing. And everyone's harping on that one, like, you know, harping on the Dwayne Haskins one. But for me, I'm looking at the other ones like, okay, you have like a whole bunch of names of guys. Yeah, they won't win Super Bowls because, you know, they're retired.
They're not playing.
They're not playing.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's really hard to win one when you're not in the game.
No doubt. No doubt. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about Eric Bieniemy. Is he too tough in Washington? And by the way, what have some of his former players have said about his tactics? We'll come up next. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right. Again, thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call. Mike Petraglia is going to join us coming up next hour. Our good friend in Cincinnati, Bengals preview. I mentioned earlier that the Cincinnati Bengals knocking on the door 2 years, still waiting for that Super Bowl title. 2 years ago, they were in the Super Bowl. Then last year lost a really thrilling ending that didn't go their way. A big penalty on a hit on Patrick Mahomes when he was going out of bounds. That sort of decided that game as Buckner got a shot at kicking it through the uprights, giving the Chiefs the win, a 3-point victory in the AFC title game. I felt gutted for that kid. And now the Bengals come into this season and taking yet another shot. But Burrow did limp about a week or so ago, limped off the field, got carted off. And we'll talk to Mike about all of that and the team's outlook for 2023 coming up in hour number three. All right, so Eric Bieniemy is the new offensive coordinator with Washington. He left Kansas City and became working with Ron Rivera with the Commanders. Now, many of you know Eric Bieniemy because of when he was with the Chiefs. The Chiefs were this stellar offensive team that has won championships, win Super Bowls, got one of the most dynamic players on offense in the NFL, not only in Patrick Mahomes, but when Tyreek Hill played there, with Travis Kelce. You're talking about a guy that should be one of the candidates or the candidate for the next head coaching round of opportunities. And yet 15 times he has gone on interviews and he has not landed a head coaching job. So going to Washington raised a lot of questions about Bieniemy, right? Why would you do that? Well, he wanted to call plays. I mean, he wanted not only call plays, he really wanted to run the whole offense. And Andy Reid has a say in a lot of the offense in Kansas City. And while Bieniemy does get credit being an offensive coordinator, I think he wanted to do a lot more. Now, what does that mean in Washington? Well, week three in the camp since teams reported in. And Ron Rivera said yesterday that players are coming to him and saying they're a little concerned about Bieniemy's intensity, right? And Bieniemy is saying, look, I'm going to be vocal. That's who I am. I'm demanding of my players. I'm demanding of the guys on my offense. And because if I don't do my job, I'm going to get fired. It's my responsibility to make sure that they're ready. But players are like, yeah, we don't mind that. But my goodness, he's so loud. He's so critical. I don't know if I can handle this. So Rivera did point this out. Now, Bieniemy is getting a lot of support from some of his former players, including Tyreek Hill, who said, who's put out on Twitter, just deal with it. You'll end up being better. Now, I think that one of the things that I would ask if I was covering Washington is Ron Rivera. Now, why would he say this? Why would he bring this up if he wasn't going to be super supportive of Eric Bieniemy? I mean, look, they had Scott Turner as their offensive coordinator. 3 seasons with Scott Turner, and not so much a peep on offense. So they had to change. They had to go in another direction. And they're bringing a guy that has helped the Chiefs win 2 Super Bowls and play in another. So everybody on that team should be thrilled that there's another voice that is coming in on the offense that is doing everything he possibly can to get the offense to believe more in themselves and to understand who they are and what their job is than anything Scott Turner did. But because it was in a low-keyed approach I may have been used to under the former offensive coordinator, I got to go to the coach and be concerned. Now listen, Rivera is fighting for his job, not because the Commanders have been god-awful. They've actually been sort of mediocre. Right, they've been in positions where they could make a run at a wild card spot. They actually went to the playoffs not that long ago, losing to Brady and the Buccaneers. But it's because there's a new ownership that is taking over the Commanders and Josh Harris. And we've said this many times with owners, when you're not their guy, they want to bring in their guy. That's the one thing new owners always want to do. They want to at least have the head coach of the team that they're buying to be a guy that they chose. And so if there's any opportunity to get rid of that individual, they will do so. So if look at Nathaniel Hackett. He was a terrible coach, but he was a sitting duck for the Walton group because he wasn't their choice. That's the one thing you get to do. Now, I think Josh Harris, given that he owns the Philadelphia 76ers and the New Jersey Devils, understands the sports dynamic, which is if the coach is good, there's no reason to get rid of him. So if you're Ron Rivera, you don't want to give the new owner any reason to dive down into the road of, and we'll be evaluating new candidates for this job since I just bought the team. So is this going to be in Ron Rivera's favor that he kind of threw Eric Bieniemy under the bus a little bit to the media? When that should have been, to be honest with you, that should not have been commented on. It really shouldn't have been. Eric Bieniemy should not have to answer the questions to the media about his intensity in practice. He's been in this league a long time as an assistant coach. And to me, I would be livid if my head coach did that. I would be livid. I would say, listen, I may have a style. If you want me to tamper down my my style, okay, we can talk about this behind closed doors. If the players have a problem with this, we can have a meeting, and I can talk to them about their concerns. But you don't have to be 100% honest when you're in front of that media about what goes on and the way I conduct the offense and the way I coach the offense. You don't need to be talking about the intensity that I bring, saying that the players are a little concerned. That's all you need. And by the way, if you're Eric Bieniemy, you also want to make sure that maybe it's taken 15 interviews, but someday, somewhere, you're going to get a head coaching job, and you don't need a respected guy like Ron Rivera, who will probably be picked up the second he's let go by Josh Harris because he's that good of a coach. You don't need Ron Rivera commenting on how concerned players are about how Eric Bieniemy goes about his job. Because again, if you're hiring a head coach, you've seen players' coaches, and you've seen not so much player coaches, right? And you have to decide which kind of coach do you want. Do you want a guy that the players love and they're not hard on him and they play, but you know, they're okay? Or do you want a guy that's tough and you may not get the result you want, and you may end up having losses, and then you have to decide whether or not it's that style that's causing that or not? It's a headache. And so if I'm Eric Bieniemy, Ron Rivera did me no favors speaking in the media about this. Again, that should have been behind closed doors. You can talk to me about it. I'd say, look, you're the boss. You're the head coach. You know my style. We're not strangers. We know each other. We've both been in this league a while. You know my reputation. I was glad Tyreek Hill at least pointed out, hey guys, I was with him when I was with Kansas City. And look what happened to us. If you do it, you listen to him. He's trying to get the best out of you. And one of the things Bieniemy had to say was, look, I always have their back. I'm their biggest fan. So he's out there trying to, like, he has to go sell himself to a media that, because Ron Rivera teed the ball up for them, and he's out there going, all right, right? He said, I'm going to be their biggest and harshest critic, but also their number one fan. I got their back all the time. Look, it is great in your career when you have somebody that believes in you. You will take anything if you know they believe in you. If you have people that are dedicated to your career growth, but you know that when they criticize you or they're hard on you, it is because they want you to succeed. Maybe it benefits them. Maybe they just love you to death and they want you to just succeed without any benefit to them. But when you know that, that's a good feeling to have. But when you are being criticized and somebody's being hard on you, and the only reason they're doing that is to have that personality that they have inside of them come out, and you know it, then you don't have a working relationship. Right? You just don't have a working relationship. And so I think Ron Rivera needs to say, what exactly do I have here? Because again, if you're Josh Harris, you go, hey, coach, can I talk to you for a second? What the hell is going on? Do I have guys on this team that don't want to be here because Eric Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator? What exactly is the truth? Are they concerned because they're getting a little bit of tough love? I can live with that. Are they being harassed? Are they being hazed? Like, what are we talking about? What are they concerned about? I think they weren't accustomed. These are guys on this team that weren't accustomed to this when Scott Turner was the offensive coordinator and now don't like it. But as I mentioned earlier, they haven't made a peep offensively. So sorry that somebody's coming in who knows what they're doing and trying to get the best out of this unit. But Ron Rivera, to throw your offense, a new offensive coordinator under the bus like that, that's crazy. Mike Petralia will join us hour three. You'll talk Bengals, and we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.